We're ready?
Mm-hmm.
Hello, welcome back to Bloody Bizarre.
My name's Emma.
And I'm Sarah. This episode is going to be a little bit different because this is just a little update episode. This isn't our usual regular programming, but a lot of the cases that we talk about, there's still things ongoing. People are still missing. Families are still trying to get justice. And so Emma has picked a couple of hers that have had some things happening on them. And she's just going to go through and talk about them. So if you haven't listened to the original episodes of these, you probably need to do that first to sort of have the full context. But yeah, this will just be a random episode. We're not sure when we're going to drop it. We'll have another proper episode whenever.
And there are two boys running around this house.
Yes.
So you'll probably hear clippity claps of nails.
Mm-hmm. No babies, but double dogs.
Yep. Double dogs to make up.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to get started.
Okay.
My sources. ABCnews.com article by Emily Shapiro and Janelle Klein? Maybe that's Janet Klein.
Janelle?
Oh, maybe. ABCnews.com article by Brianna Morris Grant, TheGuardian.com article by Anna Betts, ABCnews.com article by Courtney Withers, WA Today article by Heather McNeil, and EllieWarren.net. So I'm going to give you updates on four cases. The updates I'm going to give you on Ellie Warren, the Delphi murder case, the Idaho murder case, and the disappearance of Lisa Govan.
Okay.
So the first case update is from episode 71. Ellie Warren, as Sarah said, if you haven't listened to the original episode, probably a good idea to do that to get context and to hear the whole case. Unfortunately, there hasn't been too much movement on this one. Mm-hmm. Ellie Warren's dad, Paul, continues to pressure the Australian government to intervene in this case. Paul has been corresponding pretty frequently with the federal government and the Attorney General, but he says that he's kind of been continually pushed to the AFP, it's the AFP's problem. In July of last year, mm-hmm. retired Melbourne homicide detective Charlie Bezina told journalist Michael Crooks for an article for Mary Claire, quote, "It's a homicide 100%.
Of course it is,
yeah. Those that have listened to the Ellie Warren case will agree with that. I mean, it's pretty cut and dry.
Yeah.
According to that Mary Claire article, the AFP declined an interview, but provided a written response in which they said the AFP's role is, quote, very limited in foreign jurisdictions, which it is. It is. They do have to be invited to investigate a case, but they can apply to investigate a case.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the one official option the AFP has in crimes against Australians overseas is to issue what's known as a mutual assistance request, or an MAR, to the foreign government. But a 2023 inquest heard that there was no MAR made. I think I mentioned that in the original episode.
Mm.
So they're not even really trying.
They're not trying, no. Yeah, yeah, that is my understanding, is that Ellie's dad keeps going to the federal government because he's getting pushed to the AFP, but the AFP are doing fuck all.
Yeah, exactly right. And it must be just so incredibly frustrating mm-hmm. for him
yes.
to just be hitting the same brick walls.
Yep. And if you can, like, put yourself in this could happen to any of
anyone.
Us who have yep. loved ones who live or work or even travel overseas.
Yep.
Something happens to them over there, something horrible, like a murder, happens to them overseas. You expect your government to do something
to
about
do
that.
The bare minimum,
to
which
do the
is
bare minimum.
To issue a MAR, which they
yes.
haven't done.
Yes.
Now, just recently, and this is, I haven't researched this, so this is just off the dome, but you know those two girls that died of methanol poisoning in Laos?
Yes.
So the AFP did actually issue a MAR to their government, and it was rejected by the government. So that essentially halts their ability to investigate.
Mm.
But at least they did that.
Yeah. I just don't understand why they haven't done that in this
yeah,
case.
I know.
And my understanding is also that there's been a few things on this case where it seems like the AFP has just put it in the too hard basket and just kind of...
Well, they just continually are saying it's not our jurisdiction.
It's not our problem.
Yeah. I think they don't realise how much Paul Warren...
Cliffy. You're a noisy breather.
Can't remember what I was saying.
You were saying I don't think they realise.
Oh, yeah, I don't think they realise how much Paul Warren knows.
Mm.
Or they're just like, he's just a civilian. Like,
yeah.
They're not showing him the respect that he deserves.
Yeah. And I think that they're underestimating him and the lengths that he's willing to go to fight for Ellie.
Or the fact that he's just not going away.
Yeah.
This isn't gonna just gonna go away.
And I would encourage anyone who is as outraged by this as we are, can you contact your local member about stuff like this? Like, what is the process?
Contact your federal member.
Your federal member, and then they will speak on that on your behalf if that's something you're concerned about.
So if you visit elliewarren.net, Paul frequently updates the page with correspondence and information on the case. So I would encourage people to go there first just to see where it's at, because it's constantly updating. So probably what I'm telling you now might even be very possibly could be out of date by the time you hear this. So, head to elliewarren.net for any information.
Yeah, and if you're an Australian citizen, this is something that should concern you. Who's that?
He told me off for having Clifford off the leash once.
Oh, on your own lawn?
Yeah.
An old man just walked past with a couple of dogs and Emma just pulled the finger at him. He wasn't looking.
Okay. So that's my only update, unfortunately, on Ellie Warren.
Yeah.
The next case update is on the Delphi murders. Mm-hmm. So this was back in episode 73. If I wanted to, I probably could have done a full episode on this one.
Right.
So I haven't included every single piece of information from the court case, which happened. I'm going to keep it pretty brief just for the recap. So to refresh memories, this was the case of 13-year-old Abigail Williams, or Abby, and 14-year-old Liberty German. She was called Libby. The two girls were out on the Monon High hiking trail in Delphi, Indiana, when someone took and murdered them, and their bodies were later found not far from the Monon High bridge where they had posed for a photo hours earlier. So this was where the guys down the hill audio came from, that haunting.
Mm-hmm. And they were super close to home, and their parents were dropped them off and were picking them up. And
And Delphi, Indiana, is not a town of that many people.
Yeah.
So when we left this case, 52-year-old Delphi man Richard Allen had been arrested for the crimes, and they were going through the courts. Now, an arrest warrant, unsealed, said that Allen had admitted to being on the trail and to wearing clothes that matched the man seen in the Bridge Guy video, which is that down the hill one. A search of his home found knives and firearms, including one which police said matched an unspent round found near the crime scene. I think I might have gone over this in the last episode, in this episode before. Yeah. I can't quite remember what I covered and what I haven't, so there's going to be a little bit of overlap. So apologies for that. What was missing from their case, however, was any DNA evidence linking Allen to the scene. So Allen pleaded not guilty in that court case. After his arrest, he was taken to a correctional facility where he was kept in solitary confinement.
Why?
For his safety, apparently.
Oh, okay. Yeah, people don't tend to like people who kill kids.
Yeah, and there was a sexual element to the crime as well. While he was in the correctional facility, he made a series of confessions to his wife, his mother, the prison warden, and to a prison psychologist. According to the statements and evidence released during the court proceedings. Now, Allen's defense team alleged before the trial that the girls were killed as part of a ritual carried out by members of an Odinist cult in the Delphi area.
That's right. They were making all these wild claims just to muddy the waters. Yeah.
They said this because there were sticks and branches laid across the girls' body that they said resembled runes and symbols that were like common in the Odinist cult. Judge Francis Gull ruled that this theory wasn't allowed to be presented to the jury, so the jury weren't able to hear the Odinist angle.
She was like, "It's fucking ridiculous. Shut up.
Yeah, we're not going to hear that." Mm-hmm. Allen's confessions, the defense argued, were made during a mental health crisis. Now, I did hear that while he was in solitary confinement, he did lose his mind. Like,
okay.
He like was like shitting and smearing on the walls and shit like that.
Okay.
Like he did.
He actually lost it.
Yeah. His psychologist, Dr. Monica Waller, testified Allen had confessed to the murders in detail. According to Dr. Waller, Allen said that he'd followed the girls with the intention to sexually assault them, but had been startled by a van that had passed by. And they did talk to a man who drove by in a white van on that day. Like, the guy didn't see them, but there was a man that drove by in a white van on that day. The psychologist said that his confession contained details matching the crime scene. But it was unclear whether Allen had already received the paperwork from his legal team, which contained those details, or whether he had come to those conclusions organically, or like, you know, because he was there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
In a recorded call to his wife, Alan could be heard telling her, quote, "I did it. Just know I did it. I killed Abby and Libby." In another call, he says, "I think I did it. I wish they would kill me or let me apologize to the families at least."
That'll fix it.
Yeah.
"Hey, sorry. My bad."
Yeah. Are we all good? Are we all square?
Yeah.
In another call played for the jury, this time to his mother, he said, quote, "I'm worried that you guys aren't going to love me because I said I did it."
So strange.
Yeah. The wording is strange too. "I think I did it." Yeah. "Because I said I did it."
Yeah, that is weird.
Carroll County prosecutor Nick McClelland spoke for more than an hour during his final statements. He told jurors February 13 had, quote, "started out like any other day, but that day, Bridge Guy stole the youth and light out of Abby and Libby." Alan's lawyer, Bradley Rotzi, used his closing argument to criticize the, quote, "bungled investigation." He said, quote, "Time and time again, we had to do the investigator's job." He argued Alan had sat in a cell for more than a year, labeling him, quote, "a fragile egg." He said, "You should question the credibility of this investigation." The trial had lasted more than 2 weeks. As the guilty verdict was read out, the prosecution team hugged. So he was found guilty.
Mm-hmm.
Alan did not react.
Okay.
He turned to his wife and daughters asking, quote, "Are you okay?"
Okay.
Outside, a crowd was gathered with signs and they cheered when the verdict was announced. After he'd been led away in handcuffs, his wife, Kathy Allen, left the courtroom and she said, quote, "This isn't over at all."
Okay, she's so they're going to appeal.
Appeal, yeah. Okay. Alan was sentenced on December 20, until which point a gag order was in place. So the gag order has been released, has been lifted, so people can talk about the case.
Okay.
And there is an interview with his defense team, but I won't get into that too much here. But they basically just said, like, there was so much that wasn't allowed to be heard and stuff like that.
Right.
I'm guessing about the Odinist stuff.
The cult.
Yeah.
The culty stuff.
So at the moment, Richard Allen will serve 65-year sentences, consecutive 65-year sentences for the girl's murder. So that's 130 years.
Right.
None of his relatives attended the sentencing and he showed no emotion when the sentence was read out. But yeah, the defense team have made it clear that they will be appealing this. So we will be hearing more about this, I'm sure, at some point.
Right.
And that's that one.
Yep.
The third case update is the Idaho student murders.
Yes.
So yeah. This was episodes 81 and 82. This is a relatively brief recap, but again, this is the case of the four University of Idaho students who were murdered in their house, in their share house. Mr. Brian Koberger was linked to the crime a few different ways.
Yeah, yeah.
And this one was so interesting to research as well because...
This one was so scary that... Didn't I ask you to stay over my house that night? Or was it a different one?
I don't know. You're always scared.
It was so scary. It was so scary. And it happened so quickly. This is the one where it was like...
He was in and out within like 14 minutes or something. Yeah. This update is brief because the trial has not taken place yet.
Okay.
But at the moment, the defense team have had the case moved from Boise to Luther County, Idaho, after Koberger's attorneys argued, among other things, that he would not receive a fair trial in the courthouse in the local area where the killings happened, which I can understand that. Now the defense team are arguing that the death penalty, which the prosecution will be seeking for this case, should not be applied because they're saying it's unconstitutional and shouldn't apply in the case. I don't think they'll win that appeal, but we'll see what happens. Mm-hmm. It might have already happened. I'm not sure, but I'll give you another update after the trial probably.
Yep.
So Brian Koberger's trial will take place later this year, at which point, as I said, I'll be back with another update.
Yep.
And that's that on that.
Mm-hmm.
The fourth update is on Lisa Govan, and this was episode one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, this is the first case we covered on the podcast. A woman went missing in the small mining town of Kalgoorlie in 99.
If you go back to that episode, it's going to sound very different because we had just started. It was the first time we'd ever, like, recorded. The audio is probably bad.
We were using mics that you clip onto cameras.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. But also I think we probably were, like, a little bit awkward.
And, oh, totally, yeah. It's so different to now.
We're so good at it now.
You'll hear such a stark difference in the professional quality. So this woman went missing in Kalgoorlie in 99. She's not been seen since, and she was entangled with a local bikie gang at the time. There are massive rewards for information on the case, but nothing has come from it to date. And there's now an inquest into her death. So Club Darrow's associate, Raymond Fisher, told the inquest into her death he was, quote, positive he saw Ms. Govan on the back of Billy Grierson's motorbike on the morning she disappeared. Mr. Grierson, a member of a rival bikie gang, the Gypsy Jokers, was shot dead in 2000 by a sniper outside the Aura Banda pub northwest of Kalgoorlie, allegedly on the orders of the publican and former senior Perth detective Don Hancock, who himself was later car bombed.
We had a listener who actually has asked us to
cover that.
Interesting. I said to her, it's very interesting and I want to do it, but I am actually very scared to do it.
I'll do it.
I don't want us to get carbonated.
I'll do it. I mean, if I'm covering Lacey Govan.
Yeah, I guess.
Accusing bikies of doing that. Wildly. allegedly. Yeah, so that's all entangled in this, potentially. At the time, Raymond Fisher, who is supplying this piece of information to the inquest, was an employee of John Hope, a former Club Darrow's member who was suspected to have loaned his Land Cruiser ute to the clubhouse on October 8 to dispose of Miss Govan's body. So it's all really entangled.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Fisher said Mr. Hope had told him to clean the ute after it had been borrowed. Please stop doing that.
I thought it would help instead of being like just a ring.
But you're making noises.
Oh, okay.
If you heard that, that was Sarah wiping the table from where she put down the drink. He told the court, quote, I just did a quick spray of the Land Cruiser. Mr. Fisher is the last scheduled witness at the inquest after police were unable to track down two other witnesses considered central to the hearing. So those are Club Darrow's member Andrew Edhouse. You remember him. I spoke about him in the episode. He was seen walking with Ms. Govan into the clubhouse at the time she went missing, with a witness alleging Mr. Edhouse had, quote, stomped on Ms. Govan's head inside. CCTV footage shows Govan talking to Edhouse outside the club in a laneway before his housemate, Trevor Atkinson, and two others approached the pair. During the opening address at the inquest into Govan's disappearance, counsel assisting the coroner, Sue Markham, said Atkinson appeared to strike Govan to her neck area and then walk away, with Govan then throwing something, maybe a cigarette butt, at him. She alleged he then turned around, approached Govan in a menacing way, but Edhouse intervened and the group separated without further incident. So
some violence was happening, yeah.
And there's a bit of motive too.
Yeah.
So Govan then planned to
go... How fucking fragile.
Oh, like, I mean, it's always this way, isn't it?
Yeah.
Or she laughed at me.
Yeah, or like, oh, she pushed me or something. Okay, I'm just going to go back and like break her jaw.
Govan then planned to go home, but instead caught a taxi to the Club Darrow's compound, a large industrial shed and old house behind locked gates. Mm-hmm. At the time, Edhouse and Atkinson lived in the house with their girlfriends. A group of people continued to drink at the compound into the early hours of the morning, with the last sighting of Govan about 7:30 a.m. when the group whittled down to just Edhouse, Atkinson, Govan and another man, Patrick Nathan, who was asleep on the couch.
Yeah, that's not great.
Not good, yeah. Govan's partner, Hamill, was not happy that she'd gone out that night. I mentioned this in the episode. He left work at 3:30 a.m. to look for her at the Exchange Hotel on Hannon Street after calling her phone repeatedly and leaving abusive messages.
Were we casting aspersions on him?
I was.
Yeah.
I don't know what his motives are.
What his deal is.
Yeah.
But it sounds like he's not the one who killed her.
Maybe. Who's to know?
Yeah.
Mr. Edhouse was not able to be located, but another witness testified that he had actually called Edhouse earlier in the week to discuss the inquest, so he's aware of it. Police were also unable to serve a witness summons to Miss Govan's boyfriend at the time of her disappearance, Timothy Hamill. Coroner Michael Jenkin told the court witness inquiries were ongoing before adjourning the inquest. So at this point in time, the inquest has been adjourned until they can get those other witnesses. Outside the court on Friday, Miss Govan's mother, Pat, said she was pleased the inquest had been adjourned and hoped that it would give the police more time to find the central witnesses. So that's it now. The inquest has been adjourned. Investigators can track down the other persons of interest, and likely when that case is picked up again, mm-hmm. I'll be able to give some more information. Yeah. And you know, who knows, maybe there'll be a conclusion to that story.
Yeah,
because it seems like they're very close.
Yeah,
but also remember in that episode, the first episode, I said one of the detectives was like, yeah, 100% we know who did it.
Yes. Yeah. We just can't prove it.
Yeah,
yeah.
Which mm-hmm. I think is the case with a lot of these things.
Yeah.
All right. So yeah, that's my recap episode.
Yeah, I'll probably do something similar when I get time because there's a few of mine where there has been this stuff that's happened on the cases since we recorded it. So I'll probably do one as well.
Yeah.
Soon.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, guys. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Hope you enjoy the podcast. If you do, give us a like, rate us, review, tell your friends, whatever else. Get on the Instagram, all that jazz.
And we'll be back with like a proper episode, a normal episode soon.
Don't probably know. Already.
Don't know.
We'll don't know. Bye.
Bye.